Before we talk about the next bit of lecture material, let me do comment briefly on the lab quiz, which is the next hurdle that you need to get over. So lab quiz will be on Monday. That'll also be the day that we check out of lab. The lab quiz is going to cover really just two things: the experiment in which we did the dehydration and NMR. So as far as that dehydration experiment, there was the mechanism that we covered, where we started with the alcohol and we saw how to make the five different alkenes that can and do form. Now, in that mechanism, I might have made some shortcuts to help reduce the number of structures that are being written down. So you're perfectly allowed to do the same kind of shortcut in your answer, but essentially I'm broadcasting that I'm going to be asking about the mechanism for that reaction. Now, I won't ask you for any specific quantitative information, but the purpose of the lab report that you did was to try to figure out which alkenes were present in that product mixture that you ended up with. So I would probably ask, in general, the same type of thing: how would you determine the composition of the different alkenes? So again, you wouldn't need to have memorized specific values, but you need to be able to describe how you made that determination. Then the rest of the lab quiz will focus just on NMR, and it'll focus on the main aspects of NMR that we've done so far this quarter, including types of solvents that are used, what the number of chemical shift is, in other words, what the definition of that delta is, and why it's a useful quantity, which is that it's machine independent. What affects chemical shift as far as the physical properties, the way that neighbors can influence what the chemical shift ends up being. Then, of course, we talked about integration, and then finally, splitting. We will not get into complex splitting, so as much of the discussion that we had about splitting this quarter that we had, that will be the extent of the depth of it on the lab quiz. So if you do read in the text about splitting, you'll see that besides doublets and triplets and quartets, you can have things that are called doublets or triplets of quartets. But again, that's complex splitting, which you're not responsible for at all. So again, solvents, what chemical shift is, what influences chemical shift, integration, and splitting. So questions then of what's going to be on the lab quiz. Fairly clear, I would say. Okay. So what we're going to do now is have our first lecture on alkynes, which means, unfortunately, the lecture class today is going to be a little bit out of whack for the afternoon section. But in fact, I'm forgetting, before we get to alkynes even, we never really, really did finish talking about how to properly name alkenes. I know that we had the EZ system that we discussed, but we hadn't firmly described all the cases where you can use EZ and where you shouldn't use EZ, or where you can use cis-trans, where you shouldn't use cis-trans. So let's review that first. And give me just a moment, just so I can try to parallel. Let me look at the last lecture I did in the other section. Okay. So first molecule that I want to look at is this one, and where we have the two methyl groups on one side, two hydrogens on the other side. Would it be appropriate to use cis or trans, or E or Z, or both, or neither? Okay, so I heard two different answers. Why would you say neither? Yes, so let me go ahead and write the hydrogens in fact. And let me just remind us one last time about this terminology that I'm using when describing configurations of double bonds, so specifically the faces versus the sides. I know as I talk about mechanism, I keep stumbling over what word to use to say that, for example, bromine adds to one part of the double bond versus the other. But here, we're talking about cis, trans, EZ. There's a very strict way that I've been using the term. So one carbon of the double bond versus the other. Those are the two different sides of the double bond. And then the top versus the bottom are the two faces of the double bond. So if we notice on both the top face and the bottom face, we have a methyl group that is pointed the same way as a hydrogen. And I had briefly mentioned that there is a steric factor as far as what alkene would prefer to form thermodynamically. So there is an importance that there's some interaction there. Well, but that methyl group with one hydrogen is exactly the same interaction as you'd have the methyl group and the other hydrogen pointed the opposite way. Meaning that if you were to switch the two hydrogens, you end up with exactly the same molecule again. So the only reason that we use the term cis or trans or E or Z is to describe that it is one configuration versus another. But since there's only one configuration possible, there's therefore no term that should be used. So it would in fact be wrong to call this cis, trans, E, or Z. So in a molecule, or when an alkene, has two of the same substituent, on the same side, there is only one configuration, there is only one unique configuration of that alkene, and so it cannot be called cis, trans, E, or Z. So when do we have a cis-trans case? Well, as soon as we put two different substituents on either side of a double bond. So cis is when they are on the same face. Trans is when they're on opposite faces. And let me point out here again that there is a hydrogen at each position. And so that there are different substituents on each side. But notice that there's only one alkyl substituent on either side, which means that we're only comparing two objects. The hydrogens are just effectively being ignored. So this is the proper case of using those terms cis and trans, because cis and trans are only relative terms. We'll see in just a moment that as soon as we put one more substituent on, we can't use the term cis or trans. So just highlighting that the terms cis and trans are appropriate because only two substituents are being compared. And again, cis means on the same face, and trans the opposite face. Now, what about these terms EZ? Can they be used here? Well, yes, because E and Z are absolute configurations. And here's the way that it works. On each side, you first identify which substituent is the most important of the two, the more important of the two substituents. And how do we determine that? Using the same priority rules that we had for R and S. So in this case, it's really simple because we have a carbon attached versus a hydrogen attached. So automatically, when you only have one substituent on either side, it's going to end up being the same thing as cis and trans. So let me make that statement, and then we'll see how things change when we add another group on. So E and Z are absolute, not relative configurations. And I'm sorry, this is a bit of a jumble, but let me add up here that cis and trans are relative configurations. Which is why the term shows up in more than one place. We use cis and trans in this case to describe the orientation around alkene, but we could also talk about substituents pointing the same or opposite ways on a ring. So we've talked about cis and trans substitution on cyclohexane, for example. E and Z are specifically and only used for double bonds, and it is a system in which the configuration is determined by identifying the most important substituent on either side of the double bond. And I'll just add in, using the Kong-Ingold-Prelog rules, which are the same ones for R and S. So let's see some examples of now where we have multiple substituents. Let me back up. For the cis case, that's going to be the same thing as Z, which I probably mentioned some time back, that comes from zusammen, German word for together. Then eingegen, opposite,
E for trans.
Now let's come to this case where we have three substituents total. So would this be E or Z? Right, the answer is no. If I ask, would it be E or Z? No, it wouldn't. Because it's neither, because you have two of the same substituent on one side of the double bond. So again, there's only one unique configuration possible, so you can't use cis, trans, E, or Z. Trick question. So what about these cases? Well, now we have two different substituents on either side. We have a methyl and a hydrogen on one side. We have an ethyl and a methyl on the other. The most important substituent on the left side is methyl, because there's a carbon versus a hydrogen. On the right-hand side, it's not automatically because the chain is longer, but it is in this case, because at the end of the methyl group, we will only have hydrogens, whereas the first carbon out from the double bond, there's another carbon attached on the ethyl group. So carbon outweighs hydrogen, it's more important. So the first molecule, that would be E. Second molecule would be Z.
But you can't use the word cis and trans any longer, because cis and trans are just relative terms. You would have to say there's both a cis and a trans relationship here, which then doesn't tell you which molecule it is, because they both have cis and trans relationships. So you have to use
E and Z. Question came up in one of the other sections. Well, what if we had bromine or some other atom? Well, it would follow the same Kahn-Engel-Prelog rules, where the higher atomic number takes precedence over the lower atomic number. So this is just to say whether a double bond is cis or trans or E or Z or neither, none of the above. But what about actually using these terms in nomenclature? So there's a slight twist on how you can use these terms when you start naming molecules. So let's name a series of alkenes. And again, let me cheat and look briefly at the other notes. Okay. So start with a simple one. What would be the name of this compound? How many carbons does it have? Six. And it has one double bond, so how would we name that? It's hexene, but we do have to say where the double bond is located, so what it would be then. Hex one ene or one hexene if you're following the older style. Do we need cis, trans, E, or Z? No. In fact, we can't use cis, trans, or E, or Z. This is a terminal alkene. And if you have a terminal alkene where you have two hydrogens at the end, terminal alkenes never have cis and trans associated with them. So the name is just hex 1-ene.
Did I talk about the terms internal versus terminal double bonds? I did. Okay, so this is terminal. It's at the end. Let's see an internal one,
because once we have an internal double bond, a double bond, we're going to have two possibilities. And this is one example. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. So
can we use the term cis and trans here? Yes, because only two things are being compared. One substituent on one side versus the other substituent on the other side. Can I use the terms EZ here? Yes, because any time you can use cis-trans, you can use EZ. But not the other way around, as we'll see in a moment.
So you could use cis-trans. You could use EZ. So this would be either cis hex 2-ene or Z hex 2-ene.
Notice that you don't use parentheses with the word cis. That's because it's a relative term. Notice you do use parentheses with EZ because it is an absolute configuration. With absolute configurations, you use numbers, but only if there's more than one of them. So just as before, where if we only had one R or S in a molecule, you didn't use the number, same thing here. So questions about any of this? I think I've just been marching on, but let me ask if you got questions. I know it's kind of dry, it's nomenclature, but hopefully it's somewhat logical.
So let's see another example, because I could do trans, but let's... Oh yeah, why not? Let me just put that up there for comparison. So again, I could use either cis or trans, because there's only two things being compared, and anytime you can use cis and trans, and if there's only one double bond, you can use E or Z. So this is trans hex to ene, or E hex to ene. Now what about a case like this? Would I use cis or trans or E or Z? No, because I'm back again to the case where I've got two of the same thing on one side of the double bond. So how would this be named? Two methyl, there's still one, two, three, four, five, six carbons, so two methyl hex, two E. What if I had this case? Well, which end would get the two? The alkene or the methyl group? The alkene, because it's the functional group. So when you have different functional groups on a molecule, the highest priority functional group determines the number position. So since the alkene could be numbered by the two if we started from the right, versus the methyl group that could be the two, well, the alkene wins out. We now, again, though, have a cis alkene, so we do have to specify that. So this could be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 methyl, oops, sorry, cis 5 methyl hex 2 ene, or Z 5 methyl hex 2 ene. And that's because the alkene is more important than alkyl. One next example. Can we call this cis or trans? No, because we would have to call it cis and trans. We have two things that are on the same face of the double bond. We have two things that are on opposite faces. The cis and trans word don't have incorporated into them which of these is the most important functional group. So that's why I'm saying you can't use the cis and trans there. You have to use E or Z. So the only name that would be acceptable in this case would be, well, is it E or Z? Z. Did you say G? Z. So, yes, because the propyl group is the most important thing on one side, the methyl group is the most important thing on the other. And so that is Z, 3-methyl, 1, 2, 3, 4, still hexene, so hex, 2, ene. We're almost at the end of the examples. What about a case like this? Can we use the word cis and trans? Can, for either of the double bonds, we use the cis and trans terms? The one on the right side. Can we use them on the one for the left? That means we could use it for this whole molecule, because there's only two things being compared on the one double bond. So cis and trans are still fine, because only one double bond needs specifying. But it's now a diene, so we do need to reflect that in the stem. So notice so far it's been hexene. Why? Because E immediately follows X. We're now going to have a diene, and we don't say hexdiene, even though it's perfectly pronounceable. But the rule is you put an A in, so now it turns into hexadiene. Which way do we number it? Well, from the left, the lowest number would be 1. From the right, the lowest number would be 2. So we're going to number it from the left. So this is either going to be trans hexa 1,4-diene, or it'll be E hexa 1,4-diene. Two more examples. Can we use the word cis and trans for either double bond? Can we use them for both double bonds? Then we can't use the term, because you're only supposed to compare two objects total. Well, this molecule has two points of comparison. So you can't use cis and trans. Now, you'll see it done sometimes, but it's not proper use of the terms. Instead, we have to use E or Z. And that becomes just like the R and S, where now we're going to put numbers with it, because we have more than one configuration that needs to be named. And we just list it in numerical order. We don't worry about which one's E and Z, except in the next case I'll show you. Otherwise, you just list it in order. Curiously, though, would we number this from the left or the right? Doesn't matter, because you get exactly the same result. So this will be 1, 2, 3, 4, 2. Now wait, are these E or Z, these double bonds? They're still E, because they're still opposite. They're still trans. So this will be 2E, 4E. Hexa 2,4-diene. The last case is this one. Another hexene. But how would I number it, from left or the right? Well, it still would be 2 from either direction. But before, it didn't matter which way I numbered. I had E versus E. But now one of them's E and one of them's Z, and that's the only thing different on the molecule. Which one is named with the lower number? E. And you can think it this way. It is easy to remember which one is first. Easy? E versus... It works, right? This is 2E, 2,4-Z, hexa-2,4-diene.
And it's the last case of alkenes. So the very last thing that we'll do, because of something that we'll do in lecture later, is what happens if we have an alkene with an alcohol. It'll be our one example of a bifunctional molecule as far as how to make it. So, I have an alkene at one end, I have an alcohol at the other end. So both of those groups potentially could have the number one. Which one do I call one? The alcohol. So alkenes and alkynes are above alkenes, are above halogens. You always name halogens as substituents. Above that, there's alcohols, and then things with carbon-oxygen double bonds, so aldehydes and ketones. And above that are the various carboxylic acids. Now, we've not dealt with any of those groups. The only thing that we've really seen this quarter is alcohols. And ethers, but we don't talk about ethers till next quarter. So an alcohol is more important than an alkene. And so this gets the name, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. It's a hex again. Hex, where's the alkene located? At the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 position. Why am I naming the alkene part of it first? Because the letter before the N tells you whether you have a single, a double, or a triple bond. So we have hexane, hexene, hexine. And those are different right after the number term. So if following that, hex, 5-ene, 1-ol. You simply add the functional group endings together. It's just EN, because another fussy little grammatical point in terms of nomenclature. If you have two vowels, then due to elision, you drop one. Elision is the grammatical term saying that two vowels get rid of. Let's see one example where we put all of this together. No, you won't have one on your final like this, but let's just do it. Sometimes we can do something just for intellectual pursuit. There was one quarter where we got enough into nomenclature that they actually made me a t-shirt with a stick figurine made out of carbons and oxygens with the words, name this. No one would get it except the class, but they got a laugh out of it. Ten. If you're counting. How many total specifications are we going to have to make? Three? I'd say four, right? Two stereocenters and two double bonds that need configurations, correct?
From right to left, that first double bond is what?
Z.
Z. R or S?
4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
Correct. Because we have an oxygen, we have a carbon connected to two carbons. Why two carbons? Because remember, there's a virtual atom there because of the double bond. So oxygen, carbon connected to two carbons, carbon connected to one carbon. One, two, it's one, two, three. Yes, that's correct. So S.
The next double bond. And the next stereocenter,
oxygen, carbon connected to two carbons, carbon connected to one. It looks S. The hydrogen, the least important group, is pointed away or towards us, so we have to reverse it. So yes, it is R.
So this molecule, we're going to number from the left, because the most important group, the alcohol, is located at position 1. There are no substituents, so we'll start. Well, even if we had substituents, we put all the specifications first. So this is 3R, 4E, 6S, 8Z. Deca, 4, 5. Diene, 3, 6, diol.
Oh, I forget an alcohol. Oh my gosh.
1, 3, 6, triol.
Yes. Oh, you're right.
Wow.
Because there are two consonants put together, so we do need an E. Yes. Would it be what? It is. Gosh.
Oh, I was looking at the other side there. Wow. Not my.
At least you all are alert. Questions?
Then, where I wanted to start today, till I remembered all this, was alkynes.
Which, since we've done so much nomenclature, let's take the 2 minutes it takes to talk about alkyne nomenclature, because it's very boring. Because an alkyne has what kind of geometry at each carbon of the alkyne? Linear. It says SP hybridized. If it's linear, there's no comparison that you're making, so there's no such thing as cis and trans. So there's no configurations with alkynes. Now, there's this very complicated system of what to do if you have an alkene and an alkyne. I'm not going to get into it because, in fact, the rules are changing. And the rules, the draft rules, I think, were put out in 2005, and they're still arguing about them. So who knows what it's going to be. So we're just not going to worry about it. So if you have alkyne names, the alkyne will be the only thing in the molecule, unless there's an alcohol. Putting alkynes and alcohols together is easy, because it follows the same rules. Alcohol gets more importance.
So here's a typical alkyne. This is but-1-yne. Anything smaller than this, we technically don't need to use numbers with. There is no such molecule as prop-2-yne,
because that would mean having the carbon number 2 connect to carbon number 3. But we still have carbon number 1 where the triple bond could have been. So it's not numbering it appropriately.
Similarly, Ethine, also called acetylene,
doesn't need numbers because there's only one kind of ethine possible as well. If you had two alkynes in a molecule,
pretty straightforward. This would be hexa-2,4-diene. And just to throw an alcohol example in, this would be I think because you have to use a number period, we do use them both places. Pro-2-ine-1-all. Makes me remember, though, that this fragment, where you have a position next to a triple bond,
and we have this term allyl to describe a position next to a double bond.
Next to a triple bond, this is aspargyl.
I don't know if it has something to do with asparagus or what, but that's the term. That's it for nomenclature of alkynes. Since I want to match what will happen with the lab class this afternoon, there's only one reaction in here I want to show of alkynes, and the others I'll show in lecture. Just to not confuse too much, I think I'm going to post these notes as the lab lecture for today, because we don't really have a lab discussion for today. And then what happens next, I'll post as the lecture notes. Yes? There will be none. Well, actually, no, for this section, there will be optionally. I'll explain once we're done with lecture.
So the one reaction of alkynes I want to show you. Is a reaction that's only possible with terminal alkynes. So you can use very strong bases like sodium amide, which, let me make an aside here.
There's NaNH2, which is an ionic compound. Does that coffee taste good, Lan? Ionic is extremely basic. There's another set of reactions that we're going to see in lecture today
that is sodium, ammonia,
which is sodium metal in ammonia.
And in fact, in this set of conditions, the ammonia is cooled and condensed, so it's liquefied. There are two totally different sets of reagents.
So just be careful not to confuse the two.
If we take that NH2 ion, which, think about it,
ammonia itself is already a basic compound. We're taking a proton off of it, which means you've got a really basic compound. Well, it'll react with an alkyne because, remember, one of the physical properties that causes compounds to be more acidic is hybridization of the orbital in which the anion will eventually reside. So because when this gets deprotonated, it ends up in an sp orbital that's lower in energy than an sp2, lower in energy than an sp3. And so this is comparatively acidic.
And so this base will deprotonate it. Makes what's called an acetylide ion.
Basically a negatively charged triple bond. These are useful as a sneaky way of building a carbon-carbon bond. So I might have mentioned earlier in the quarter that one of the most important types of reactions that eventually you're going to be learning is how to make carbon-carbon bonds. And we already saw a sneaky version of that by using sodium cyanide. Cyanide as a CN minus as being a nucleophile. Well, technically that's a carbon that's attacking and making a carbon-carbon bond. This is a very similar
reaction, because if you have a primary substrate, the acetylide ion can do an SN2 reaction. So again, the reason this is important is because we've now built a larger carbon molecule. If we're trying to do drug design of some sort, we have to build carbon frameworks. So this is one of the tools that could be used. Note the way that I've written the product. Triple bonds throw people sometimes when writing structures. So you all are getting much more comfortable. And think about when the class started, you barely had started writing line structures. Come a long way since then. But triple bonds still will stump people every once in a while as to how to properly represent how many carbons really are there. So realize that on either side of that triple line, each of those positions counts as a carbon. If I had just taken this molecule and from where the substituent or the leading group was, if I wrote the triple bond from there, I've just left a carbon out. So just be careful when you're writing the product. Now this only works for primary substrates because the acetylide ions are really basic. So with even a hindered primary, you're going to get elimination. Or with secondaries, you'll get elimination. And of course, tertiaries can't even do SN2. So let me put in parentheses here. Only works with primary substrates. Now let me show you a multi-step synthesis that's often used to make alkynes. And this might be the one and only example of a multi-step synthesis that I would expect you to know for the final. Only because you did it here in lab. Because how can we make an alkyne? Well, you can start with an alkene that you react with Br2. That's going to make a vicinal dihalide. If you throw in sodium amide, this strong base, you can get elimination that occurs. But notice that once the elimination occurs, we still have a hydrogen and bromine that technically are antiperiplanar to each other. The double bond is flat, so if you look along the double bond along its axis, you'd have a bromine pointing straight up and a hydrogen pointing straight down. So it continues to react if you still have more sodium amide around to do a double SN2. So contracting this a little bit, if I take alkene, react it first with bromine, and then with two equivalents, sodium amide, I can produce an alkyne. Yes? NaNH2. Questions? So we will continue with Alpines in lecture.